In this episode of Ideas, I talk to Sidney Finkelstein about education, his new book, Superbosses, Patterns, and much more. Here's our conversation. All right, today's guest is Sidney Finkelstein, who is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management and Faculty Director at the Tuck School of Business and the Center for Leadership at Dartmouth College. He's published 20 books, including his newest release, Superbosses. He's a recognized thought leader on leadership and is listed on the Thinkers 50, the most prominent ranking of management thinkers in the world. Sidney, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Great to be on with you, Adam.
You've done so much, actually. I had to keep trimming down your bio. One of those things being that you wrote the book, Why Smart Executives Fail. That was a huge success. That's actually where I first found out about you. But do you have anything else you'd like to add to all the things I just said to give listeners more context?
Well, I keep on doing research on all sorts of topics, but the primary focus I'm working on right now is around super bosses. And I know we'll talk about that and how I'm building out a set of tools to help organizations become much more effective at creating high potential talent.
Awesome. Yeah, Super Bosses was a great book. We will get to that later in the show. But I first want to talk to you about education because of the work you do at Dartmouth. Talk a little bit about how you're currently influencing education in the future and how you see education changing for the better in the years to come.
Well, the truth is that both K-12 and higher ed are in the midst of a revolution. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations, a lot of schools are not responding as quickly as would be ideal. I think it's pretty well known what's going on in K-12, the really poor test scores of kids and how so many kids are falling further and further behind. The good news is that a lot of the energy is coming from a lot of different groups that are developing not just charter schools or Teach for America, but other efforts even within school districts. I know of one in Texas, for example, is building an institute to help train superintendents and principals that is going to play out, I think, in a pretty effective way. When it comes to higher ed, the biggest challenges are online education and cost. And maybe a third one, especially for undergraduate education, once you're done with your 4 years of school, can you get a good job? And that's a big concern for a lot of parents, of course. And I think some schools, I think Dartmouth is probably ahead of the curve a little bit in terms of the types of deep experiential activities we have, both for undergraduates and for MBA students, that justify why you want to be present on campus rather than taking a class online somewhere else. I think that's a question that every school is going to need to answer. You know, why not take that online physics class from the MIT Nobel Prize winner in physics? It'll be pretty tough for your local school, however good that university might be, to match up to the Nobel Prize winner. So you got to add something else. So I think it's a time of transformation in higher ed. And we're certainly trying both at Dartmouth and the Tuck School, the business school, to emphasize the experiential side of education that could add so much more than just learning through online means or through any other kind of more third-party means.
Would you say that a lot of the growth from online education has come down to people feeling it saves time? Would you say that's the biggest thing? It seems like time is becoming our biggest resource right now.
Yeah, it does save. It does save a lot of time. And I think it's also a statement of when the traditional alternatives are just not as attractive as they have historically been, either because of cost or because of time, as you say, certainly, and maybe on occasion, even quality. So yeah, those are all factors.
Let's now talk about the influence you're having in the business world, because obviously I mentioned both of your books, Why Smart Executives Fail, now Super Bosses. How have you had such an impact?
Well, you know, I chose to be an academic because I love to do research. I love to try to understand really tough, important problems that organizations care about, that need to solve. In my case are things around learning from mistakes, how to become more effective as a learning organization, how to avoid falling into the traps that end up destroying careers and companies. And a lot of those ideas are in the Why Smart Executives Fail book. And over the last 10 years, really, for what turned out to be Superbosses, really all about how do you develop the world's best talent. Every organization cares about it. Every business cares about that. And so I've tried to find some answers through my own research that are unique, that are different, that can add a lot of value. And then through my own consulting, my keynote speeches, my teaching, through media, I try to share those ideas with as many people as I can. And there's a lot of companies out there. So sometimes you wonder just how big an impact are you having? But for those organizations that I do engage with, I feel like we are moving the needle.
Mm-hmm. That's great. We'll just jump right into Super Bosses, your latest book, a great book, by the way. Go ahead and give listeners a brief snapshot of what it's about and what makes it different from other business books out there.
Yeah, sure. So a super boss is the word I use for a leader, a manager, a boss that helps other people accomplish more than they ever thought possible. And as a result, they accelerate their careers. When you go look at the senior management, senior executives in an industry, even today, and you go do what I call a genealogical study, which means looking at who they work for, not of course their parents, and you will find that in almost every industry, there's a small number of people that have had this outsized influence on the development of talent. Those people are, I call them super bosses. And it turns out that there are super bosses in every organization, up and down an organization. And you know, all you have to do is think about, you know, someone in your own career that had a big influence on you, some former boss that said, you know, I think you can do this job, or I'm going to give you this challenge. And you may not have been sure you could do it yourself, but you took it on and it worked, and it gave you such tremendous confidence and it just accelerated what your own potential could be. And that's what super bosses do. So you could see what the upside is, not just in terms of legacy and impact, which is a really big deal, but even in terms of the bottom line, because if you surround yourself as a manager, as a leader, as an entrepreneur, if you surround yourself with really great talent, and those people are continually getting better, you'd be pretty hard-pressed not to actually become more successful. So I think the upsides are there in terms of how to make an organization do better and in terms of your own personal impact on the world.
That's great. You're talking about talent. What are some things that the rest of us should look for in new talent that we're hiring? Are there specifics that go across each field, would you say?
There are some, actually. I mean, obviously, if you go across so many different industries, I looked at, you know, fashion and comedy and hedge funds and consumer packaged goods, advertising. I mean, really a lot of different industries. There's a lot of industry specific know-how that will not be the same. But when I look at the commonalities that I found that seemed to be really critical, there were three or four things that kept coming up. Number one was intelligence. And by the way, that's not just IQ. It could be emotional intelligence, relationship intelligence, but just really capable, real deep capability at something that's important. The second was, and this one I really was happy to see, is creativity. Mm. Super bosses mm-hmm. value people that are able to keep coming up with new ideas, that see it as part of their own role to be innovative and creative, and not that they're in a tech job or in any kind of innovation job, in quotes. It's that whatever you're doing, whatever your job is, you can be more creative, you can be more innovative to try to improve and be better. And that's what super bosses also look for. The other things they look for were flexibility in terms of how people think and how and what they can do. They like to move people around to different jobs. And I guess the fourth would be competitiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, they really value people that have that competitive spark in them. And I don't mean cutthroat competition, but people like the game, like to win, like to be involved, and like to excel. And those are pretty good characteristics anyone should be looking for when you're hiring, and probably for people looking to kind of create and mold their careers earlier on. These are things that you want to start to develop more thinking about, more capability around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that's great information. You get a lot more specific in the book and give specific examples. So listeners, the easiest thing to do would be to just pick up the book. It's a great read. On the same topic of talent, what are some ways that businesses can retain talent?
You know, this is a pretty counterintuitive idea, and some people call it a radical idea. It actually got me thrown out of one CEO's office of a Fortune 500 company when we were talking about this very question.
Oh, wow.
And what I said, when you get right down to it, is that the key to talent retention is being willing to give up people, give up talent. And that's a hard sell for a lot of people. But in fact, that's what super bosses actually do. They help people get better. They create superstars, or they create high potentials. And some of those people at some point in time are going to want to move on to have a bigger job. Now, the best solution to that is to be growing as an organization, so you always have new opportunities for people. How do you grow? You grow because you have the best talent. So it's a bit of a circular thing here. But at some point, you know, you'll have people working for you who want to run their own show. They want to be a CEO. They want to be their own entrepreneur. They want want to run this division. And every organization, when you get right down to it, has something of a pyramid. There's only one CEO. There's only one head of marketing. There's only one CFO. And so that's going to happen as a natural outgrowth. And the question then becomes, what are you going to do about that? Are you going to fight it? Are you going to say, no, you can't leave? I mean, that's a crazy idea. This CEO that I mentioned that threw me out of the office said, why would I want to let my best people go? This is what he asked me. But think about the verb there, let. Is it the case that the people that work for us are forced to work for us? It's a crazy notion. Of course not. They can do whatever they want. They can go wherever they want. And as soon as you realize that, you then start to say, okay, how should I manage this more effectively? How can I be more strategic? And I think of people like Lorne Michaels, say, from SNL, you know, in comedy, a tremendous super boss. So many great comedians started at SNL and moved on to great success. You know, Tina Fey and Larry David and Jimmy Fallon and all the rest. Well, anyways, he had two people that were going to leave, but he created opportunities for them. He's done this actually many times, but if you look at late night TV and NBC, two late night shows, the two hosts are Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers, both stars, superstars really at SNL. They were leaving, they were going to go, they were getting opportunities. And so what Lorne Michaels, the executive producer, the super boss of SNL did is he helped them get those jobs at NBC. And he also, by the way, became the executive producer, which meant that he was capitalizing both financially and reputationally on the success of his proteges. So the truth is that when you treat people in a certain way, which is to say, you help them get better, you give them huge opportunities, they're actually going to stay longer than they otherwise might. And add in the millennial story to all this, and then you can see how powerful the argument is. Millennials are not looking to stick around for their, you know, the gold watch after 25 years. Even the Apple gold watch is not going to do it, I think. they're going to leave.
Yeah.
And so once you know that, you should be managing, this is the subtitle of the book, you should be managing the flow of talent. Not only how people come in, not only how you move them around and help them get better, but even how you manage their next stage of career, even if that happens to be outside of your own organization. And that's a radical idea, but it's going to happen anyways. And as soon as you realize that, if it's going to happen, do you want to just fight it? Do you want to just argue? You want to say, you know, no, you're disloyal? Or do you want to manage it in a strategic way to get the maximum benefit? To me, it seems like an easy answer when you frame it that way.
Wow, that's really good. So you're saying more focus on not only what will help people want to stay, like company culture, but also truly wanting other people to succeed, no matter if that's for your business or for another business.
Yeah, because, you know, when you focus on the team members, the individual talent, and helping them get better, and you don't focus just on trying to keep them, the irony is you end up keeping them much longer than you otherwise would, because these are people that are having an incredible experience, incredible work experience. And it's only reluctantly that they end up wanting to go to the much bigger opportunity that at some stage you might not be able to offer. So you end up keeping people longer, but that's not where you're starting. You're starting with more of a super boss mentality that I described.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. You spoke briefly on creativity, and it seems like even in your own book, you saw a bunch of patterns, which I saw as creativity. You studied them and then pieced them together to form the book, which is what I loved. You connected the dots for the readers. Is that how you're wired? Are you always looking for patterns? Is that how you write? Talk a bit about patterns and creativity.
Right. Now, that's a great, it's a great question. The actual research process that I went through, both for why smart executives fail and for super bosses, was very inductive. And by that, I mean, I had a general question I was interested in. For the earlier book, why do people fail? Why do companies go out of business? And for this book, how do you create the world's best talent? So they're really big questions. And I start talking to people. I literally interviewed hundreds of people for both of those projects. Long interviews, long interview transcripts, and do all kinds of other research and studies. And over time, you get to the point of saying, well, what's connecting here? What are those patterns? And there is an intuitive side to figuring that out, but I also went through it in a very rigorous fashion as well, with a variety of research assistants that I also tasked with thinking through what some of the patterns might be, looking for commonalities across how they looked at it, looking at how I looked at it. And so it was actually a very kind of rigorous and very specific way of doing research. But the broader issue around patterns, that's always been kind of how I've thought about things. You know, what connects my writing, not just for these books I write for the BBC and other places, are almost most of the stuff that I write, most of the articles, are connecting things that most people are not necessarily connecting. So, for example, in a piece I wrote for BBC Capital, the ability to change management. You know, I had examples from the Ubers and the Airbnbs of the world and the challenges that they were putting onto the taxi industry, the hotel motel industry. But I also had an example of kind of all of us in everyday life who say, you know, we should get in better shape. We should lose a little bit of weight. We should do a little bit more exercise. Why doesn't that happen? Turns out it's exactly the same reason in personal life for something as basic as being healthy and eating well, as it is in companies that are trying to deal with revolutionary change, with disruption and all the rest. And I just kind of make those people find it fascinating, of course, because it gives them a different lens. But that's what makes it useful, I think. You know, if it's not interesting, then you're not going to read it. It's not going to stick with you. And at the end of the day, my goal is to change how people think and how organizations function to be more effective, to be happier, to have better lives and better organizations. So you gotta, if you want to get that market share, you got to talk to people in a way that resonates. And it turns out that focusing on these patterns, even across things that seem to be disconnected or unconnected, is a good way to do it.
That's awesome. For those listeners that may want to write a book someday, how long does it take you to actually write a book?
Well, I don't want to scare off everyone. You know, I know people have written books very, very quickly, but I only really do one type of book, and that is a book that's based on reality, based on research. I don't make this stuff up, as I like to joke. Unfortunately, there are plenty of people, they don't make it up, but they might have two or three examples from some consulting experiences, and then they put it together, and here's your answer. And I'm not going to say you can't learn from a book like that, but that's not my thing. My thing is to take on a much more rigorous process of, in my case, as I described, you know, hundreds of interviews. You don't have to do hundreds of interviews. I tend to do overkill in these things, probably. But the result is that it took 6 years for Why Smart Executives Fail. And that is, to be precise, from when I got the idea to when the book came out. So there were a lot of steps in between, including the research stage, the writing stage, and then the waiting for the publishers to get their act together stage.
Yeah.
You might know about that as well. And so, and for super bosses, maybe because I'm slowing down, it was 10 years from when I got the initial idea to when it actually came out. But in that case, there were really multiple years of research. But again, I don't want to scare anyone away. You don't have to be quite that rigorous, but I really, you know, if you want to write a book that means something, that you feel confident, you've figured out something important, don't slap together, you know, two or three or four little experiences that you've had. That would be a good article. Nothing wrong with that. But that's not a book that's going to be remembered and have an impact.
That's great advice there. And so now, what's one last piece of valuable advice that you want to leave listeners with today?
If there's one bit of advice I have, it is that each person should take personal responsibility for their careers and, more important, their lives. It turns out, if you talk about super bosses, you can find super bosses. You could seek them out. You could seek out these people that can help accelerate your career. You shouldn't be passive about it. When you talk about personal lives and being healthy, there's so many things we can do in terms of eating well and exercising, all the rest that I touched on earlier. I think each one of us should try to take personal responsibility for what we're trying to accomplish in our lives. And I hope one part of that will be to help other people get better in whatever small way that might be. And I'm not talking about business necessarily, but doing something good for someone else, that's actually wired into our evolution. That's something that's actually makes us feel good. But we're so busy being busy that we don't take the time to be mindful enough to manage our own lives, manage our own careers, and look for opportunities to do things that will help other people. I think if all of us did a little bit more of that, we'd all be better off.
That's so huge. What stuck out there to me was personal responsibility. So many people make choices and then complain about it or blame other people for it. And just being responsible for choices is so huge. You know, if you don't like the outcome, then you can change the outcome with your choices.
Yeah. Adam, it's also really important, this last point you mentioned, which is, I'll just say in the context of big business and then make it broader. There's a CEO I know once told me that I only have to be right 50% of the time, as long as I do something about when I'm not right. And that is as powerful a lesson about everyday life as possible. People worry about doing things right or wrong. Do the best you can. If it's not working, fix it. Do something about it. And that's certainly about personal responsibility, but it's also a mindset about saying, you know, well, why do I have to have this problem? Why do I have to have this issue, this, whether it's work, whether it's personally or what have you? Fixing that, trying to do what you can to fix it, is a powerful thing.
That's a great lesson that all of us can take away. So much great information today, Sydney. Here's my last question to you. Where can people find your work?
Oh, lots of places. I think if you Google my name, Sydney Finkelstein, and Superbosses, you'll get a lot of information. You could also go on my website, which is www.superbosses.com. You can go to Dartmouth College and the Tuck School, T-U-C-K, Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. And there's a lot of information about me. And you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Syd, S-Y-D, Finkelstein, F-I-N-K-E-L-S-T-E-I-N.
Awesome. Thank you again for coming on the show, Sydney.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you got something out of these ideas. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss an episode.